Welcome back to the Bipartisan Podcast, your independent source for news, fun, and reform. This is our first stream on Twitch, so if you're listening on Twitch, check out our Twitter at Bipartisan Media, or you can check us out later when we post the full podcast on... Sorry, I just got feedback on something. Okay. So if you're listening on Twitch, be sure to check out our social medias and you can see where we post this recording later. You can check out our new merch shop as well. We have mugs and t-shirts which are affordable but are very high quality and help us support our podcast. You can send us messages on voicemail if you're listening on Anchor that will be put into our next show. You can check out our new websites for our updates, our schedule, and more at bipartisanmedia.com. If you're interested in sponsoring us, be sure to call or email today. And Bipartisan Media is putting out a bunch of new shows this week. The Weekly Wave with Sam Porter, Reason with John Vooz, and Jonesing for Liberty with Rod Jones. So with that, let's get into our top five stories. We're starting today with a story about Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. They will be meeting in Vietnam for their second meeting for Trump's presidency, which is focused on the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Riley, what do you think is going on with this?
I think that what's going to end up happening is exactly what happened last time Trump and Un talked about denuclearization. Nothing's going to happen. He's going to go make false claims, and then nothing about denuclearization is going to happen at all. I think that Kim Jong-un is very headset in his ways, and so even though the whole world is telling him, hey, denuclearize, he's going to be like, I will. And that he's not. We saw it happen in the United States North Korea summit that took place last year. And I think it's just going to continue to where people are going to pressure him, but he's not going to do anything.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. This is the exact same thing that happened last time. I don't think that anything will change, as you said. I think that we're just going to have this back and forth where Kim Jong-un says he will denuclearize, but then he won't. And we're just going to keep having this cycle until something big happens.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is going to end up leading into when Kim Jong-un finally snaps. And, like, since he didn't denuclearize, but he claimed he was. And at first, what happened during the first summit is everyone believed he was denuclearizing till evidence came out he wasn't. And I don't think people are going to trust him this time, though. Like, I think things are going to not same way. So our second story is about Venezuela, which all of the political conflict going on there between Juado and Maduro. Is a bunch of Venezuelan migrants ended up help cleaning up the border after Maduro fired tear gas on activists, and a bunch of Juado supporters came to end up help clean up the border after Maduro had blocked human aid and ended up messing up some of the bridges. A bunch of the citizens and migrants came in and started to clean up the border a bit.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see how this crisis in Venezuela is going to continue. It'll be really interesting to watch as Guaido begins to have more power against Maduro and to see whether or not Maduro will allow U.S.-backed aid or any humanitarian aid to be allowed into Venezuela. I don't think that it is in Maduro's best interest to allow aid because of how much of the citizen population of Venezuela is against him at this point, and a well-kept society is not one that has a well-kept society is one that has power against the people who are ruling it. So I think that if he continues to starve and hurt his population, they're not going to have any ability to come and rise up against him.
Yeah, I also think with a foreign pressure from not just the United States, but a lot of the European Union and even other Latin American nations like Colombia that are putting pressure upon Venezuela, I think that what's going to end up happening is Maduro is only going to continue to lose power till he holds no power in the government as Juado takes power. Because right now, the only supporters of Maduro are the military, and not even a good majority of the military, just some of the military, and a lot of the wealthy in Venezuela. When a majority of the population is in support of Juado, and a majority of foreign aid is in support of Juado, I think what's going to end up happening is a huge push for Juado to be in power. And I think it's going to happen really soon since Russia is really the only supporter of Maduro.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is going to come to a head very, very quickly in the next couple of weeks, probably, and we'll get this change in power in Venezuela once and for all. So our next story is about the Oscars, which takes place tonight, which recording this on Sunday the 24th. And I'm really interested to see how the Oscars are going to play out this year, considering the fact that they have no host because of the Kevin Hart scandal, in which he did not apologize for the homophobic tweets he made earlier in his Twitter career. And so I'm interested to see how the Oscars Academy is going to have transitions in the Oscars and see how that plays out, because it might be in the best interest of every award show to not have a host if this goes well. Riley, who are you hoping will win a good Oscar tonight?
I'm not a huge fan of the Oscars because I don't really think it represents what the people's choice in movies are, but it's always still entertaining to watch. And I think what's probably gonna win is movies like Black Panther and Bohemian. But of movies I saw that I would want to get some sort of recognition, Bohemian was probably one of the better movies I saw. There was that really good claymation, I think it was called Isle for Dogs. That was fantastic. I don't think enough people watched that last year. But it's going to be interesting because I think the safe bets are going to be what wins. But I'm also really excited to see kind of how the Oscars handles no hosts this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm really excited to see who will take home those really big awards. I think I agree with you that Bohemian Rhapsody will win a good amount, and also A Star is Born with Lady Gaga in it. I think that will hold a lot of traction this award season.
Yeah, I'm really excited, especially because I think it was a good year for animation as well, with like Incredibles 2, the Spider-Verse movie. I think a lot of good animations came out, so I think that's going to be a good talking point. So our next story is about Jussie Smollett, which is a actor from Empire who claimed that he had been a victim of hate crimes. He is a actor that is black and openly gay, and he ended up coming out with claims that two people in red masks attacked him, throwing racial and homophobic slurs. But it was later revealed that he paid these people to attack him, and he is now going to end up suffering. Sorry, my bad. He's going to end up suffering a bond at $100,000, and he is forced to surrender his passport. So, Hannah, what do you think of someone staging a hate crime to get their political message out?
So I don't think this was a political message per se. I think that Jussie Smollett, who was an actor on Empire, wanted more screen time, wanted better pay, and I think that's why he thought he'd get into the limelight a bit and have those things bumped up for him. However, I was really disappointed when I heard that he had staged this against himself, because there are so many people of color, so many people of the LGBT community, and so many people who are both minorities in that respect, who face these hate crimes on a day-to-day basis throughout their lives. And for him to take that as a means to better himself in his career is just really heartbreaking, because you think about those people who aren't believed when this happens to them, and you see that he staged it in a way that he wanted more publicity. And I think that's going to harm the people who are both people of color and in the LGBT community. When they want to report a hate crime that is done against them, I think that the media will begin to see this more and more as like people aiming for attention, and less that we need to have some sort of reform in our society where we see people of color and people in the LGBT community and the harms against them in a more serious light.
Yeah, I agree. I think what ends up happening is a lot of people that don't have this celebrity backing, this whole public opinion on them, this whole like celebrity style to them where these people get a lot of attention. Normal people, everyday people that suffer these hate crimes aren't often believed. And when somebody that has this much attention brought upon him is ended up being believed as a result of this because he's such a heavy figure in society that people look at it and they believe him. It sets a bad precedent where if one of the main people that is supposed to set an example is believed and it turns out he staged this, what does that mean for people that don't have this publicity behind them when they come out with these allegations? Like these people already aren't believed, and he just set a bad precedent for the entire LGBT community because he has that amount of publicity behind him and he decided to fake something like this.
I agree with you 100%. I think that we should always believe survivors of hate crimes and of all these bad things that happen to minorities, be it women or people of color, people in the LGBT community. I think we have to believe survivors, but when he puts himself out there as someone who has fled false accusations, then that sets us back as people who should believe those who are harmed. So let's move on to our final story, which is the Social Security expansion bill, which is poised to gain traction in Congress. This bill would expand benefits for current and future recipients of Social Security, and would extend the program's solvency for 75 years, which is according to the Social Security's Office of the Chief Actuary. To help fund these proposed changes, earnings above $400,000 would be subject to Social Security taxes, and payroll taxes would gradually rise to 14.8% from the current 12.4% by 2043, with workers and their employers splitting the tax as they already do. So, Riley, what do you think about this bill and what it would mean to do for Social Security?
Well, this is probably where we're going to disagree, but I don't like this because it just encourages more taxing of people that are making more money. We've talked about this before where I'm not full Republican except for when it comes to my economic policies, and I don't believe in this idea of taxing people unfairly because they make more money than someone. I'm of the belief that America should have a flat tax rate, so I really don't like this because this is just going to add more and more taxes to people that are working hard.
Yeah, so of course I could disagree with you there. I think that the $400,000 mark is a pretty large amount that not many people hit who are working class Americans. And so I think that that's a fine amount of money to tax, especially because of how much Social Security helps people in the United States who are retired and helps them live their lives in a way that they can do what they want to do as retired people who are living out the remainder of their life and not having to work. I think Social Security is a really important part of our society, and that people who earn a large amount of money and who won't have to rely as heavily on Social Security should pull their weight and allow for those less fortunate than they are to have a means of survival when they retire.
I can see where you're coming from. I'm just of the belief that, like, you come here to make your own life and you shouldn't be punished and have something taken away from you to give to somebody else in a country that promotes your own self-growth and self-development. But I could see where your stance is on it.
Yeah, okay. So with that, we will move on to our breaking news segment.
And now, bringing you the hardest hitting journalism out there, it's time for breaking news.
Welcome to our breaking news segment with our totally serious, totally real news stories. So first we have that PETA tweeted over Steve Irwin's legacy, and basically what PETA ended up doing is they dishonored somebody like Steve Irwin by making claims that his harassment of animals got him killed. And while there is validity to his involvement with animals getting him killed, I don't think it is okay to end up dishonoring a legacy of someone this important into not just American culture, but culture across the world, where, like, this man made such a huge influence on TV. Like, everyone knows who Steve Irwin is. And I don't think it was okay for PETA to attack him when, especially, we've seen PETA's track record of they don't really do much to help animals at all. So, Hannah, what do you think of this?
I am a big fan of Steve Irwin and how much he did to help when he went on, like, daytime talk shows. And he talked about animals in a way that made them seem less frightening than we all seem to portray them when they're in zoos and behind cages. But he made those animals a friend to everyone who watched him. And I think that that's really great. And so I don't like how PETA went and criticized him on the day of his 57th birthday.
Yeah, definitely.
Our next 100% serious story is that a man with no arms, stabbed his father's stomach with a blade held between his toes. It was a scissor blade held between this man's feet because he had no arms, and he stabbed his father. Riley, what do you think about that?
I mean, you know what? If you want to give that a go and it somehow works for you, I'm still having trouble comprehending it, but you know what? I mean, cool. I mean, this is like the story we talked about a couple weeks ago where, like, that dude was able to assault somebody with his feet. This is like, I don't know whether this is an accomplishment or something we should look down on, because this man did attack his father, but this is promoting a society where people with no arms can still succeed. So, I mean, hey, to each their own. So our final breaking news story is about men who attempted to rob a bank blocked by secured doors. And so they tried to rob the People's Bank while wearing black masks, and one of them was carrying weapons, but they were unable to get inside the building because the security doors were blocked. Like, they were secured doors. And so they ended up just running away. But what ended up happening is the cameras caught what car they were riding, and they are looking for these men right now. So, Hannah, what do you think?
Look, I mean, good for the bank to have that kind of security. I mean, that's something that we should, like, all banks should take into account. Just having doors that don't open, that's one way to keep your money safe. And so with that, we will head in to our quiz.
Time to see if our hosts have been paying attention to the news. It's time for our current events quiz. I'll ask a question. The hosts will have 20 seconds to come up with an answer, and then we'll see who's right. Everybody ready? Let's go. Alright, everybody, it is I, Ron Jones, the producer of this fine podcast that we have here today, and I'm here to host our current events quiz. It's going to be great. You heard the rules in the intro. 20 seconds to come up with an answer. Here we go. So, first, hosts, are you ready?
Yepers.
I'm ready.
All right. Today's fun because we have a special theme for our quiz here today, our current events quiz. I'm going to ask each question is on a country that's number one in the world for something. And then you guys will have to find out what that is. So for our first question, which country in the world is number one for football, or us Americans call them soccer, players? In other words, which country has the largest amount of soccer players? And also, as the article that I have pulled up terms it, exports these soccer players to other countries' teams. You have 20 seconds. Your 20 seconds is up. Riley, we will hear your answer first. Which country is number one for soccer players?
I'm going to go with Spain. I don't know. I'm feeling Spain.
Good guess. Good guess. All right, Hannah, what is your answer?
I'm going to guess Colombia.
Colombia. Unfortunately, both of you are wrong, but Hannah was the closest with Colombia because the answer is Argentina, the number one nation in the world for soccer players.
Shucks.
I know. It's sad. So, moving on to our next question here. Which country has the oldest head of state? Which country has the oldest head of state? You have 20 seconds. And this time we're going to get some music in the background just because.
Thank you.
up. Hannah, we will hear your answer first. Which country has the is the oldest head of state? Go.
So when you say head of state, I'm picturing like the Queen of England. She's pretty old. So I'm going to guess the United Kingdom.
All right. And Riley, what is your answer?
I'm going to go Russia.
Russia. Okay. And Hannah was correct. Oldest head of state, Britain. Technically Britain rather than the UK, but it's pretty much the same thing. Let's face it. Sorry, British listeners. Yes, the nation with the oldest head of state is, in fact, Britain. The Queen of England. Moving on to our third and final question. Which country has the largest number of lakes? Which country has the largest number of lakes? You have 20 seconds. Seconds is up. Riley, we'll hear from you first. Which country has the largest number of lakes? Go.
I think that the place with the most lakes probably has to be the United States. Like, we're massive. There's a lot of famous lakes here. I'm gonna go United States.
And Hannah, which nation has the largest number of lakes?
I'm gonna steal Riley's answer here and say the United States as well.
Unfortunately, no, you're wrong. I'm sorry, but the answer is very close to the United States. It's Canada. Canada.
Gosh dang it, Canada. Lakes
with a massive, massive amount of lakes. Canada's number one in that respect. I mean, I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that 35 to 40% of their landmass is covered in lakes, something like that. So yeah, pretty big.
We got to be like second then.
I don't know, actually, but probably. So, with that, I will hand it back to you guys, and we will move on to our... actually, we're going to an ad break right now. That's fun. So, we're moving to a quick ad break, and Riley and Hannah will be back. In a second, once I get the music going. For a couple of ads. With so much content whizzing around out there, there's only one storytelling platform that keeps you calm and stay informed and inspired. Flipboard. Flipboard curates the world's stories so you can be smarter in your work, life, and play. Choose from thousands of topics to personalize Flipboard and get the latest stories from the best publishers and experts delivered to you 24/7. When you see stories that you want to save or share, tap the plus button to add them to private or public collections. It's that simple. Used by millions of people every day, Flipboard is how people move themselves and the world forward. And we at the Bipartisan Podcast really love Flipboard because they have stories from a wide variety of sources, meaning that they are bipartisan in the stories that they deliver to you. So don't delay, get started now at Flipboard.com. That is Flipboard.com. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show into all the apps people like to listen? How do I make money from the podcast? The answer to every one of these questions is very simple. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means that you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. That's anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast.
In an era when people are reduced to partisan bickering and squabble over the smallest of matters and never achieve any agreement on anything, we are here to provide a new light in a dark world of journalism. We are the Bipartisan with Riley Lautermark and Hannah Albor.
Welcome back to our three other stories, and our first story today is about Venezuela again. So what's going to end up happening is Mike Pence, Vice President of the United States, is set to meet with Guaido in Colombia to discuss a few different things. One of them is about humanitarian aid from the United States going into Venezuela, and another is more sanctions to be placed on Maduro. And what these sanctions would do is they would end up sanctioning all of Venezuela, but mostly limit Maduro's power while promoting Guaido's power. So what do you think of all of this, Hannah?
I mean, I think the United States has a pretty rocky history when it comes to interfering in South American and Latin American countries, but I'm interested to see how this meeting with Pence and Guaido plays out because, as we've said before, the United States is backing this challenger to Maduro after all of Maduro's humanitarian dysfunctions with Venezuela. And so I think that if Mike Pence is able to gain Guaido some traction, both in Venezuela itself and as a world power, and say that the United States is backing him, and we get other countries on board with Guaido, I think that would definitely change the outcome of what is going on in Venezuela. So let's move on to our next story, which has to do with 2020 Democratic candidates. As 2020 candidates turn left, some Democrats worry about the center. So we've seen a lot of liberal Democratic presidential candidates decide to run for president. And so I think that a lot of people in the center are becoming kind of afraid of how far left the party is shifting. So if you want my opinion as the left-leaning co-host of this podcast, I think that a lot of Democrats do want the Democratic Party to shift further left in response to how the Trump administration has been treating things such as climate change and such as rights for women and other minorities. And I think that a lot of people are looking for that further shift left as we get closer and closer to 2020. Riley, what do you think?
I think this large influx of candidates is going to cause actually a huge problem and a split for the Democratic Party. The same way the Republican Party is experiencing a split between Trump Republicans and more traditional Republicans, I think that there's a lot of progressive Democrats running and a lot of traditional Democrats looking to run. And I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to end up causing some sort of split. And not all of the party is going to be in support of one candidate. And I don't even think a majority of the party is going to be in support of one candidate. And I think what this is going to cause is it's going to get to the election where one Democrat's facing off against a Republican, hopefully not Trump, but it'll probably be Trump. And I think Trump might win due to this division within the Democratic Party. So our next story is about the European Union Parliament election that is going to look to split the European Union even further. Right now, we have seen that the European Union has experienced a huge split with the France and Italy issue that has been going on with Brexit. And this is going to further divide as we start to see a lot more far right leaning people trying to take power of the European Union. And a good amount of these political leaders are attacking one another. Hungarian Prime Minister Orbán attacked the migration policies of Juncker and publicly discredited him. And I think that this is going to cause further division in the European Union. And this is kind of why Britain left, is this whole ununified organization that is only starting to split and crack apart further. So, Hannah, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't very good news for the European Union. I mean, we're going to talk later in the podcast about Brexit itself, but I think that with the dissatisfaction that Britain has with the European Union and whether or not they will leave later next month, I think that this is a good showing for why they should leave. While I do disagree that Brexit is a good idea, I think that this dissatisfaction with the EU will garner some reform within the union itself. And with that, that is our top three stories, and we will head into our bipartisanship update.
It's time for the bipartisanship update, presented by the Bipartisan Podcast.
So this week's bipartisanship update has to do with a bipartisan public lands bill. This public lands bill would aim to protect some parts of public lands as well as help them prepare for climate change. This omnibus bill is a collection of more than 100 measures previously introduced in the Senate and passed with 92 senators approving and only 8 voting against. The headline item in this bill is the recently lapsed Land and Water Conservation Fund. The bill will permanently reauthorize the fund, which provides money for federal, state, and local conservation projects. So this is a really good thing, I think, that we are preparing our public lands for the crisis that is climate change, as well as making sure that it is that the projects that are within it are well funded and able to keep conservation going. Riley, what do you think about this bill?
As always, I love bipartisan bills like this, where it's not really in favor of one party over the other. And I mean, there's always going to be people upset about this, especially people that are pro-climate change that want a more radical shift, and that are people that don't believe in climate change or don't think it's that important are not going to like this. But I think this is a good middle ground for a lot of both Republicans and Democrats, because there are definitely concerns on both sides to be looked at. Republicans have validity in saying that climate change shouldn't be the main focus of our issue, and Democrats do have validity in saying it's a huge issue. And I like a bipartisan bill like this that kind of ends up pushing something that both sides can kind of look at and be like, you know, this isn't 100% what I wanted, but this does not end up hurting me in any way.
100%. I definitely agree with you. I think that it's great that we are taking control as a group of both Democrats and Republicans and how we are going to deal with our lands as we determine whether or not climate change is is what we want to focus on, especially with so many Republicans being climate change deniers. And as we look forward to the Green New Bill, which we're going to talk about later in the podcast as well, and how that will seek to put an end to things that are causing climate change in the United States. And so with this bipartisanship update, we're going to head into our discussion.
Moderate today's discussion. If you're new here, our discussion is basically just it really is a discussion. It's like a respectful debate in which our two wonderful hosts here talk about current events and talk about an issue that I present to them, and then I sort of moderate the conversation. So today's topic is Brexit. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with Brexit, basically what's going on is Basically, what's happening is Britain wants to leave the EU. They held a referendum quite some time ago, I believe over a year or two now, and they really have sort of been dragging their feet after that vote was held to leave the EU. And just last month, I believe, their Prime Minister, Theresa May, tried to get a Brexit bill through, but it didn't pass, and then she almost got a no-confidence vote, which is the British version of impeachment. So, yeah, that was interesting. But now it looks like Britain finally may leave the EU after all this time. So, Riley, you go first. What, in your opinion, will be the effects of Brexit if it does in fact happen?
I think there's no doubt that it's going to happen. The better question is it going to be a soft Brexit or a hard Brexit? And I think with Theresa May being in charge, it's going to end up being a soft Brexit, which, in case people don't know, a soft Brexit would still include Britain. Like, Britain would still have the euro as their currency, and they would still be involved in European Union trade. They would just not have to enforce a lot of the rules and migration policies of the European Union, which is one of the main reasons they left. I don't think the effects are going to be that great on the country as a whole. I think they're not going to end up having to carry the backs of weaker countries anymore, because what it ended up happening is a good amount of these weaker countries were getting financial support from Britain, and Britain was receiving nothing in tandem. So what was happening is Britain was losing money to support these countries that were only going to continue to experience collapse. But I think what's going to end up happening for Northern Ireland is I think Northern Ireland is going to leave Britain, British rule, and join the European Union. So I think that's the biggest effect, is what's going to end up happening to Northern Ireland.
Okay, and Hannah, do you agree with Riley? What do you think is going to happen if this does go through?
So I think one of the main effects of Britain leaving the European Union is the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. Right now, there is really no border between the two because they are both part of the European Union. But if Britain leaves the EU, there will be like a very hard border between those two countries, and that would lead to a lot of anger in both Northern and the Republic of Ireland because of how tensions have been there in the past. It would lead to a lot of anger in that part of the island, and that would lead to things such as bombings of the border and shootings around the border. If you have time, you should definitely watch John Oliver's take on Brexit that he posted on YouTube last week. That was really how I came to know a lot more about Brexit and how it would harm Britain.
All right, and Riley, what are going to be the effects if Britain doesn't go through?
So I think it will go through, but if it, for whatever reason, doesn't, what's going to end up happening is further divide across the European Union, because you're going to have this one country that still dislikes the European Union. And since it was only half the country, it's going to cause further division within the nation. A lot of people that were anti-Brexit are kind of now coming to terms with the fact that it's probably going to happen and are moving forward as a nation. But if Brexit gets canceled and they stay in the European Union, I think it's going to cause further social division within the country. On top of that, if they stay in, I think Britain's going to end up experiencing more economic troubles, as they're going to be forced to provide money for countries that aren't contributing. I mean, one of the biggest reasons they're leaving, again, is the fact that they were having to put large amount of their economy towards weaker nations and getting nothing in return. And I think that's going to only continue to happen and cause less economic independence for Britain and end up causing more trouble for them as a nation.
All right, Hannah, what's going to happen if Britain doesn't go through with Brexit?
So if Britain stays in the European Union, it's going to be a lot easier for the people of Britain to get things such as imports from the rest of the European Union. There's a lot of concern in Britain right now about how, if Brexit goes through, how people will receive food items or like even things such as medicine, which are imported. If you have more trade barriers between the European Union and England and Britain, you will lead to people not having access to their medications as Brexit goes through, and food shortages, flour shortages, every single thing that is imported from the European Union would be better handled if Britain did not leave the EU.
Okay, and final question, should it happen? So Riley, you go first. Should Brexit, are you in support of it? Should it go through?
I'm 100% in support of Brexit because I think the European Union is a dysfunctional organization, and I think it's mistreated the wealthier nations like Britain. So I'm in complete support of Brexit, but I would say that there's potential for, if it does happen, Britain to come back if the European Union takes a look at itself and reforms. Because the whole idea of a unified trade organization between nations on the same continent and a unified economy is great. The problem is when the European Union started pushing on migration policies and forcing Britain to support weaker nations and have Britain get nothing in return. So I'm in support of Britain leaving, but I'm also in support of them, after leaving, trying to push for a change in the European Union to make it a better system overall for all nations.
And Hannah?
So I'm definitely against Britain leaving the European Union. I mean, you can look at the value of the pound. The pound has fallen 12% against the euro and 5% against the United States dollar since before the EU referendum in 2016. This drop in economic growth in the UK is really a reason why they shouldn't leave the European Union, because of the trade barriers and because of the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. There are so many downfalls to what would happen if Britain did leave the EU. And if Riley said that he wanted the EU to change, and if Britain leaving, that would cause change. But I think that what would be better for fixing the European Union is for Britain to stay and have those negotiations from the inside, because the EU isn't going to value their opinion if they're not a participating member of the European Union. So I'm definitely against Brexit as a whole.
All right, now before we move on to our feature story, and Riley and Hannah will have a great time discussing that, I'm sure. I just want to have a quick message here. If you use Amazon, you should use our Amazon affiliate code, which is BPPodcast-20. That's BPPodcast-20. If you buy anything off of Amazon, you can get a small discount, and you can also support us directly without spending any of your own money, at least not any more than you would have before, just by using our Amazon affiliate code, which is BPPodcast-20. Again, that's BPPodcast-20. Thank you very much. And now, Hannah and Riley will move on into our next segment in a minute here.
So our major story today is about a brand new Green Deal that looks to eliminate a lot of the problems caused by climate change. It is being called the Trojan Horse for Socialism. And what this bill aims to do is it ends up aiming to eliminate fossil fuels altogether. And personally, I am not in support of this. I think climate change is a huge issue in the United States. However, because we have relied on things like fossil fuels for so long, it means a good amount of American economy and a good amount of American jobs are rooted in this idea of fossil fuels, and eliminating a lot of these jobs be done. And I think we need to push for a more green society. But right now, if this ends to eliminate fossil fuels altogether at the rate it aims to do, it would end up causing major issues for United States economy as well as United States trade. I think what needs to happen is a slower reform of our energy system, because climate change is an issue and we need to get to greener energy, but doing it this fast is going to cause issues for the people of America. So what do you think, Hannah?
So I am 100% in support of the Green New Deal. I understand the hesitancy when it comes to fossil fuel jobs, but there is a lot of push towards having those workers be retrained and have jobs in greener energy, such as solar paneling or with wind turbines or anything of that sort. I think that there is not enough time for us to take climate change slowly. I think we've seen reports that in like 12 years, the Earth is going to reach the point where we can't go back from the amount of harm that we've done to it. So I think we need to act now, and we need to act quickly when it comes to reforming the way we see energy and the way we see climate change and how we as Americans can do things to change the way that we're headed. I think that a lot of the burden of climate change comes down on businesses and big businesses who have like things like smokestacks and that kind of fuel usage. And I think that's the big thing that we should be cracking down on. It's great and all to use to use straws that are metal and not plastic and to cut down on our plastic usage as everyday Americans. But I think that the burden of this should fall on those businesses who are not green. And I think that the Green New Deal aims to punish those who are using fossil fuels willy-nilly.
I can see what you're saying, but I think in punishing those major corporations that have caused this, it's also punishing these workers. And I mean, yeah, they can be retrained and reallocated, but because of how greener, cleaner energy is going to work, it's going to require less workers. Because if you think about solar panel installment, it's way less than working in factories. And I think that this is going to eliminate jobs for Americans that need it. And I think we do need to take a shift on climate change. I think we need to get more serious about it. But I don't think we should put at risk the people now. Climate change helps the people in the future, but reducing climate change will help the people in the future. But this bill will only hurt people now. And I think that we need to take a different approach to pushing upon climate change prevention at a slightly slower rate to ensure that these people that could lose their jobs and a lot of these countries that rely on us economically for buying their fossil fuels like oil end up needing to come to an alternative before we can push a deal like this, because it's only going to hurt our foreign allies and the people in America.
Yeah, so I like 100% understand like your hesitancy to do things so quickly. But as you said, that this is going to help people in the future. And I think that's what we need to be looking towards. I think that it's selfish of us to say we should take the solar because it'll hurt people now. When we think about the decades and generations of people who are harmed by fossil fuels and how if we keep going at the rate we are now, that it will lead to greater harms in the future for like our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and how many species are going extinct so rapidly because of how terribly we're treating our environment. So once again, I am 100% in support of the Green New Deal, and I think that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez especially deserves major props for taking that kind of stance against climate change.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I just think maybe a slightly slower rate to ensure that the people of now are able to. But with that, we're going to head to the ending of the show today. Thank you guys all so much for watching. You could check our new website for updates, schedule, and more at bipartisanmedia.com. That's bipartisanmedia.com. You can contact us on Twitter at bipartisanmedia, and you can email us at bipartisanpodcast@gmail.com. You can call into the number 619-201-0964. For questions, concerns, or potential sponsors. Support us on Patreon for cool perks at patreon.com/bipartisanpodcast. I hope you guys enjoyed our first show on Twitch. If you have any sort of concerns about how it went, go ahead and email it towards our email. We'd love to hear your feedback on how this first Twitch-based show worked. You could come back next week for your independent source of news, fun, and reform. I've been Riley Lauterbach, your right-leaning co-host.
I've been Hannah Albert, your left-leaning co-host.
And remember to come back next week in order to see us. And again, one final thanks to our producer, Rod, for putting this all together. Thank you guys so much for watching.
Have a good week, guys.